I do not know the mind of this person, ELA said. Maybe they have a taste for it now? In any case, I think we can agree this meeting serves no further purpose. She stood up. Good day, Adolin Colin. I hope you will share what you discover with me so that my own investigator can be better informed.
I suppose, Adolin said, standing. Who is leading your investigation? I'll send him reports.
His name is Meridas Amaram. I believe you know him.
Shallan gaped. Amaram? High Marshal Amaram?
Of course, ELA said. He is among my husband's most acclaimed generals.
Amaram.
He'd killed her brother. She glanced at Moraes, who kept his expression neutral.
Storms! What did he know?
She still didn't understand where Helleran had gotten his shard blade. What had led him to clash with Amaram in the first place?
Amaram is here? Adolin asked. When?
He arrived with the last caravan and scavenging crew that you brought through the Oath Gate. He didn't make himself known to the tower, but to me alone. We have been seeing to his needs, as he was caught out in a storm with his attendants. He assures me he will return to duty soon and will make finding my husband's murderer a priority.
I see, Adolin said. He looked to Shallan and she nodded, still stunned. Together they collected her soldiers from right inside the door and left into the hallway beyond.
Amaram, Adolin hissed. Bridge Boy isn't going to be happy about this. They have a vendetta, those two.
Not just Kaladin.
Father originally appointed Amaram to refound the Knights Radiant, Adolin continued. If ELA has taken him in after he was so soundly discredited... The mere act of it calls Father a liar, doesn't it? Shallan?
She shook herself and took a deep breath. Helleran was long dead. She would worry about getting answers from Moraes later.
It depends on how she spins things, she said softly, walking beside Adolin. But yes, she implies that Dalinar is at the least overly judgmental in his treatment of Amaram. She's reinforcing her side as an alternative to your father's rule.
Adolin sighed.
I'd have thought that without Sadeas, maybe it would get easier.
Politics is involved, Adolin. So by definition, it can't be easy.
She took his arm, wrapping hers around it as they passed another group of hostile guards.
I'm terrible at this, Adolin said softly. I got so annoyed in there I almost punched her.
You watch, Shallan. I'll ruin this.
Will you? Because I think you're right about there being multiple killers.
What? Really?
She nodded.
I heard some things while I was out last night.
When you weren't staggering around drunk, you mean?
I'll have you know I'm a very graceful drunk, Adolin Colin. Let's go.
She trailed off as a pair of scribes ran past in the hallway, heading toward ELA's rooms at a shocking speed. Guards marched after them. Adolin caught one by the arm, nearly provoking a fight as the man cursed at the blue uniform. The fellow fortunately recognized Adolin's face and held himself back, hand moving off the axe in a sling to his side.
Bright Lord, the man said, reluctant. What is this?
Adolin said. He nodded down the hall.
Why is everyone suddenly talking at that guard post farther along?
News from the coast, the guard finally said. Stormwall spotted in New Natan and the High Storms. They've returned.
23. Storming Strange. I am no poet to delight you with clever allusions. From Oathbringer, Preface.
I don't got any meat to sell,
the old Light Eyes said as he led Kaladin into the storm bunker.
But your bright lord and his men can weather in here, and for cheap.
He waved his cane toward the large hollow building. It reminded Kaladin of the barracks on the Shattered Plains, long and narrow, with one small end pointed eastward.
We'll need it to ourselves, Kaladin said.
My bright lord values his privacy. The elderly man glanced at Kaladin, taking in the blue uniform. Now that the weeping had passed, it looked better. He wouldn't wear it to an officer's review, but he'd spent some good time scrubbing out the stains and polishing the buttons. Colin uniform in Vama lands. It could imply a host of things. Hopefully one of them was not, this Colin officer has joined a bunch of runaway parshmen.
I can give you the whole bunker,
the merchant said.
Was supposed to be renting it to some caravans out of Revelar, but they didn't show.
What happened?
Don't know,
he said.
But it's storming strange, I'd say. Three caravans with different masters and goods, all gone silent. Not even a runner to give me word. Glad I took 10% up front.
Revelar. It was Vama's seat, the largest city between here and Kolinar. We'll take the bunker, Kaladin said, handing over some dun spheres. And whatever food you can spare.
Not much, by an army's scale. Maybe a sack of long roots or two. Some lavas. Was expecting one of those caravans to resupply me.
He shook his head, expression distant.
Strange times, Corporal. That wrong-way storm. You reckon it will keep coming back?
Kaladin nodded. The Everstorm had hit again the day before, its second occurrence, not counting the initial one that had only come in the Far East. Kaladin and the Parshmen had weathered this one, upon warning from the Unseen Spren, in an abandoned mine.
Strange times,
the old man said again.
Well, if you do need meat, there's been a nest of wild hogs rooting about in the ravine to the south of here. This is High Lord Catalar's land, though, so, well, you just understand that.
If Kaladin's fictional Bright Lord was traveling on the king's orders, they could hunt the lands. If not, killing another High Lord's hogs would be poaching. The old man spoke like a backwater farmer, light yellow eyes notwithstanding, but he'd obviously made something of himself running a waystop. A lonely life, but the money was probably quite good.
Let's see what food I can find you here,
the old man said.
Follow along. Now, you're sure a storm is coming?
I have charts promising it.
Well, bless the Almighty and heralds for that, I suppose. We'll catch some people surprised, but it will be nice to be able to work my span read again.
Kaladin followed the man to a stone root shed on the leeward edge of his home, and haggled, briefly, for 3 sacks of vegetables. One other thing, Kaladin added. You can't watch the army arrive.
What? Corporal, it's my duty to see your people settled in.
My Bright Lord is a very private person. It's important nobody know of our passing. Very important. He laid his hand on his belt knife. The light-eyed man just sniffed.
I can be trusted to hold my tongue, soldier. And don't threaten me. I'm 6th Don.
He raised his chin, but when he hobbled back into his house, he shut the door tight and pulled close the storm shutters. Kaladin transferred the 3 sacks into the bunker, then hiked out to where he'd left the parshmen. He kept glancing about for Syl, but of course he saw nothing. The Void Spren was following him, hidden, likely to make sure he didn't do anything underhanded. They made it back right before the storm. Ken, Saw, and the others had wanted to wait until dark, unwilling to trust that the old light eyes wouldn't spy on them. But the wind had started blowing, and they'd finally believed Kaladin that a storm was imminent. Kaladin stood by the bunker's doorway, anxious as the parshmen piled in. They'd picked up other groups in the last few days, led by unseen Void Spren that he was told darted away once their charges were delivered. Their numbers were now verging on 100, including the children and elderly. Nobody would tell Kaladin their end goal, only that the Spren had a destination in mind. Ken was last through the door. The large, muscled Parsh woman lingered, as if she wanted to watch the storm. Finally, she took their spheres, most of which they'd stolen from him, and locked the sack into the iron-banded lantern on the wall outside. She waved Kaladin through the door, then followed, barring it closed.
"You did well, human," she said to Kaladin. "I'll speak for you when we reach the gathering."
"Thanks," Kaladin said. Outside, the storm wall hit the bunker, making the stones shake and the very ground rattle. The parchman settled down to wait. Hesh dug into the sacks and inspected the vegetables with a critical eye. She'd worked the kitchens of a manor. Kaladin settled with his back to the wall, feeling the storm rage outside. Strange how he could hate the mild weeping so much, yet feel a thrill when he heard thunder beyond these stones. That storm had tried its best to kill him on several occasions. He felt a kinship to it, but still a wariness. It was a sergeant who was too brutal in training his recruits. The storm would renew the gems outside, which included not only spheres, but the larger gemstones he'd been carrying. Once renewed, he, well, the parchman, would have a wealth of stormlight. He needed to make a decision. How long could he delay flying back to the shattered plains? Even if he had to stop at a larger city to trade his dun spheres for infused ones, he could probably make it in under a day. He couldn't dally forever. What were they doing at Urethiru? What was the word from the rest of the world? The questions hounded him. Once he had been happy to worry only about his own squad. After that, he'd been willing to look after a battalion. Since when had the state of the entire world become his concern?
"I need to steal back my span rate at the very least, and send a message to Brightness Nabani."
Something flickered at the edge of his vision. Syl had come back? He glanced toward her, a question on his lips, and barely stopped the words as he realized his error. The spren beside him was glowing yellow, not blue-white. The tiny woman stood on a translucent pillar of golden stone that had risen from the ground to put her even with Kaladin's gaze. It, like the spren herself, was the yellow-white color of the center of a flame. She wore a flowing dress that covered her legs entirely. Hands behind her back, she inspected him. Her face was shaped oddly, narrow, but with large, childlike eyes, like someone from Shinovar. Kaladin jumped, which caused the little spren to smile.
"Pretend you don't know anything about spren like her," Kaladin thought.
"I can see you."
"Because I want you to," she said. "You are an odd one."
Why do you want me to see you?"
"So we can talk."
She started to stroll around him, and at each step, a spike of yellow stone shot up from the ground and met her bare foot.
"Why are you still here, human?"
"Your parchman took me captive."
"Your mother teach you to lie like that?" she asked, sounding amused. "They're less than a month old. Congratulations on fooling them."
She stopped and smiled at him.
"I'm a tad older than a month."
"The world is changing," Kaladin said. "The country is in upheaval. I guess I want to see where this goes."
She contemplated him. Fortunately, he had a good excuse for the bead of sweat that trickled down the side of his face. Facing a strangely intelligent, glowing yellow spren would unnerve anyone, not just a man with too many things to hide.
"Would you fight for us, deserter?" she asked.
"Would I be allowed?"
"My kind aren't nearly as inclined toward discrimination as yours. If you can carry a spear and take orders, then I certainly wouldn't turn you away."
She folded her arms, smiling in a strangely knowing way.
"The final decision won't be mine. I am but a messenger."
"Where can I find out for certain?"
"At our destination."
"Which is?"
"Close enough," the spren said. "Why, you have pressing appointments elsewhere? Off for a beard trim, perhaps, or a lunch date with your grandmother?"
Kaladin rubbed at his face. He'd almost been able to forget about the hairs that prickled at the sides of his mouth.
"Tell me," the Spren asked, "how did you know that there would be a high storm tonight?"
"Felt it," Kaladin said, "in my bones."
"Humans cannot feel storms, regardless of the body part in question."
He shrugged. Seemed like the right time for one, with the weeping having stopped and all. She didn't nod or give any visible sign of what she thought of that comment. She merely held her knowing smile, then faded from his view. 24. Men of Blood and Sorrow. I have no doubt that you are smarter than I am. I can only relate what happened, what I have done, and then let you draw conclusions. From Oathbringer, Preface. Dalinar remembered. Her name had been Evie. She'd been tall and willowy, with pale yellow hair, not true golden like the hair of the Irriali, but striking in its own right. She'd been quiet, shy, both she and her brother, for all that they'd been willing to flee their homeland in an act of courage. They'd brought Shardplate, and that was all that had emerged over the last few days. The rest was still a blur. He could recall meeting Evie, courting her, awkwardly, since both knew it was an arrangement of political necessity, and eventually entering into a casual betrothal. He didn't remember love, but he did remember attraction. The memories brought questions, like kremlings emerging from their hollows after the rain. He ignored them, standing straight-backed with a line of guards on the field in front of Uathiru, suffering a bitter wind from the west. This wide plateau held some dumps of wood, as part of this space would probably end up being a lumber yard. Behind him, the end of a rope blew in the wind, smacking a pile of wood again and again. A pair of windspren danced past, in the shapes of little people.
"Why am I remembering Evie now?" Dalinar wondered. "And why have I recovered only my first memories of our time together?"
He had always remembered the difficult years following Evie's death, which had culminated in his being drunk and useless on the night Zeth, the assassin in white, had killed his brother. He assumed that he'd gone to the Night Watcher to be rid of the pain at losing her, and the Spren had taken his other memories as payment. He didn't know for certain, but that seemed right. Bargains with the Night Watcher were supposed to be permanent, damning, even. So what was happening to him? Dalinar glanced at his bracer clocks strapped to his forearm. 5 minutes late. Storms. He'd been wearing the thing barely a few days, and already he was counting minutes like a scribe. The second of the two watch faces, which would count down to the next high storm, still hadn't been engaged. A single high storm had come, blessedly, carrying stormlight to renew spheres. It seemed like so long since they'd had enough of that. However, it would take until the next high storm for the scribes to make guesses at the current pattern. Even then they could be wrong, as the weeping had lasted far longer than it should have. Centuries, millennia, of careful records might now be obsolete. Once, that alone would have been a catastrophe. It threatened to ruin planting seasons and cause famines, to upend travel and shipping, disrupting trade. Unfortunately, in the face of the Everstorm and the Voidbringers, it was barely third on the list of cataclysms. The cold wind blew at him again. Before them, the grand plateau of Uathiru was ringed by 10 large platforms, each raised about 10 feet high, with steps up beside a ramp for carts. At the center of each one was a small building containing the device that, with a bright flash, an expanding wave of stormlight spread outward from the center of the second platform from the left. When the light faded, Dalinar led his troop of honor guards up the wide steps to the top. They crossed to the building at the center, where a small group of people had stepped out and were now gawking at Uathiru, surrounded by Ospren.
Dalinar smiled. The sight of a tower as wide as a city and as tall as a small mountain? Well, there wasn't anything else like it in the world. At the head of the newcomers was a man in burnt orange robes. Aged, with a kindly, clean-shaven face, he stood with his head tipped back and jaw lowered as he regarded the city. Near him stood a woman with silvery hair pulled up in a bun. Adratagia, the head Carbranthian scribe. Some thought she was the true power behind the throne. Others guessed it was that other scribe, the one they had left running Carbranth in its king's absence. Whoever it was, they kept Taravangian as a figurehead, and Dalinar was happy to work through him to get to Yakaved and Carbranth. This man had been a friend to Gavilar, that was good enough for Dalinar. And he was more than glad to have at least one other monarch at Urethiru. Taravangian smiled at Dalinar, then licked his lips. He seemed to have forgotten what he wanted to say and had to glance at the woman beside him for support. She whispered, and he spoke loudly after the reminder.
"Blackthorn," Taravangian said. "It is an honor to meet you again. It has been too long."
"Your Majesty," Dalinar said, "thank you so much for responding to my call."
Dalinar had met Taravangian several times years ago. He remembered a man of quiet, keen intelligence. That was gone now. Taravangian had always been humble and had kept to himself, so most didn't know he'd been intelligent once, before his strange illness 5 years ago, which Navani was fairly certain covered an apoplexy that had permanently wounded his mental capacities. Adratagia touched Taravangian's arm and nodded toward someone standing with the Carbranthian guards. A middle-aged, light-eyed woman, wearing a skirt and blouse after a southern style, with the top buttons of the blouse undone. Her hair was short in a boyish cut, and she wore gloves on both hands. The strange woman stretched her right hand over her head, and a shard blade appeared in it. She rested it with the flat side against her shoulder.
"Ah, yes,"
Taravangian said.
"Introductions. Blackthorn, this is the newest Knight Radiant. Malata of Yakaved."
King Taravangian gawked like a child as they rode the lift toward the top of the tower. He leaned over the side far enough that his large Thalen bodyguard rested a careful hand on the king's shoulder just in case.
"So many levels," Taravangian said. "And this balcony. Tell me, Brightlord, what makes it move?"
His sincerity was so unexpected. Dalinar had been around Alethi politicians so much that he found honesty an obscure thing, like a language he no longer spoke.
"My engineers are still studying the lifts," Dalinar said. "It has to do with conjoined fabrials, they believe, with gears to modulate speed."
Taravangian blinked.
"Oh, I meant, is this Stormlight? Or is someone pulling somewhere? We had Parshman do ours back in Carbranth."
"Stormlight," Dalinar said. "We had to replace the gemstones with infused ones to make it work."
"Ah."
He shook his head, grinning. In Alethkar, this man would never have been able to hold a throne after the apoplexy struck him. An unscrupulous family would have removed him by assassination. In other families, someone would have challenged him for his throne. He'd have been forced to fight or abdicate. Or, well, someone might have muscled him out of power and acted like king in all but name. Dalinar sighed softly, but kept a firm grip on his guilt. Taravangian wasn't Alethi. In Carbranth, which didn't wage war, a mild, congenial figurehead made more sense. The city was supposed to be unassuming, unthreatening. It was a twist of luck that Taravangian had also been crowned king of Yakaved, once one of the most powerful kingdoms on Roshar, following its civil war. He would normally have had trouble keeping that throne, but perhaps Dalinar might lend him some support, or at least authority, through association. Dalinar certainly intended to do everything he could.
"Your Majesty," Dalinar said, stepping closer to Taravangian, "how well guarded is Vaidenar? I have a great number of troops with too much idle time. I could easily spare a battalion or two to help secure the city. We can't afford to lose the Oathgate to the enemy."
Taravangian glanced at Adratagia. She answered for him.
"The city is secure, Bright Lord. You needn't fear. The Parshmen made one push for the city, but there are still many Vaiden troops available. We fended the enemy off, and they withdrew eastward."
"Toward Alethkar," Dalinar thought.
Taravangian again looked out into the wide central column, lit from the sheer glass window to the east.
"Ah, how I wish this day hadn't come."
"You sound as if you anticipated it, Your Majesty," Dalinar said.
Taravangian laughed softly.
"Don't you anticipate sorrow, I mean? Sadness, loss?"
"I try not to hasten my expectations in either direction," Dalinar said. "The soldier's way. Deal with today's problems, then sleep and deal with tomorrow's problems tomorrow."
Taravangian nodded.
"I remember, as a child, listening to an ardent pray to the Almighty on my behalf as glyph wards burned nearby.
I remember thinking, surely the sorrows can't be past us. Surely the evils didn't actually end."
"If they had, wouldn't we be back in the Tranquiline Halls even now?"
He looked toward Dalinar, and surprisingly there were tears in his pale gray eyes.
"I do not think you and I are destined for such a glorious place. Men of blood and sorrow don't get an ending like that, Dalinar Kholin."
Dalinar found himself without a reply. Adratagia gripped Taravangian on the forearm with a comforting gesture, and the old king turned away, hiding his emotional outburst. What had happened in Vaidenar must have troubled him deeply. The death of the previous king, the field of slaughter. They rode the rest of the way in silence, and Dalinar took the chance to study Taravangian's surge binder. She'd been the one to unlock, then activate, the Vaiden Oath Gate on the other side, which she'd managed after some careful instructions from Navani. Now the woman, Malata, leaned idly against the side of the balcony. She hadn't spoken much during their tour of the first three levels, and when she looked at Dalinar, she always seemed to have a hint of a smile on her lips. She carried a wealth of spears in her skirt pocket. The light shone through the fabric. Perhaps that was why she smiled. He himself felt relieved to have light at his fingertips again, and not only because it meant the Alethi soulcasters could get back to work, using their emeralds to transform rock to grain to feed the hungry people of the tower. Navani met them at the top level, immaculate in an ornate silver and black haba, her hair in a bun and stabbed through with hair spikes meant to resemble shard blades. She greeted Taravangian warmly, then clasped hands with Adratagia. After a greeting, Navani stepped back and let Teshev guide Taravangian and his little retinue into what they were calling the initiation room. Navani herself drew Dalinar to the side.
"Well," she whispered. "He's as sincere as ever," Dalinar said softly. "But..."
"Dense?"
she asked. "Dear, I'm dense. This man has become an idiot."
"You're not dense, Dalinar," she said. "You're rugged, practical."
"I've no illusions as to the thickness of my skull, Gemheart. It's done right by me on more than one occasion. Better a thick head than a broken one. But I don't know that Taravangian, in his current state, will be of much use."
"Bah,"
Navani said.
We've more than enough clever people around us, Dalinar. Taravangian was always a friend to Alethkar during your brother's reign, and a little illness shouldn't change our treatment of him.
You're right, of course. He trailed off. There's an earnestness to him, Navani, and a melancholy I hadn't remembered. Was that always there?
Yes, actually. She checked her own arm clock, like his own, though with a few more gemstones attached. Some kind of new fabrial she was tinkering with.
Any news from Captain Kaladin?
She shook her head. It had been days since his last check-in, but he'd likely run out of infused rubies. Now that the high storms had returned, they'd expected something. In the room, Teshev gestured to the various pillars, each representing an order of Knight Radiant. Dalinar and Navani waited in the doorway, separated from the rest.
What of the Surge Binder?
Navani whispered.
A releaser. Dustbringer, though they don't like the term. She claims her Spren told her that.
He rubbed his chin.
I don't like how she smiles. If she's truly a Radiant, Navani said, can she be anything but trustworthy? Would the Spren pick someone who would act against the best interests of the Orders?
Another question he didn't know the answer to. He'd need to see if he could determine whether her shard blade was only that, or if it might be another honor blade in disguise. The touring group moved down a set of steps toward the meeting chamber, which took up most of the penultimate level, and sloped down to the level below. Dalinar and Navani trailed after them.
Navani, he thought, on my arm.
It still gave him a heady, surreal feeling. Dreamlike, as if this were one of his visions. He could vividly remember desiring her, thinking about her, captivated by the way she talked, the things she knew, the look of her hands as she sketched, or storms as she did something as simple as raising a spoon to her lips. He remembered staring at her. He remembered a specific day on a battlefield when he had almost let his jealousy of his brother lead him too far, and was surprised to feel Evie slipping into that memory. Her presence colored the old, crusty memory of those war days with his brother.
My memories continue to return, he said softly as they paused at the door into the conference room. I can only assume that eventually it will all come back.
That shouldn't be happening.
I thought the same, but really, who can say? The old magic is said to be inscrutable.
No, Navani said, folding her arms, getting a stern expression on her face, as if angry with a stubborn child. In each case I've looked into, the boon and curse both lasted until death.
Each case? Dalinar said. How many did you find?
About 300 at this point, Navani said. It's been difficult to get any time from the researchers at the Palinaeum. Everyone the world over is demanding research into the Voidbringers. Fortunately, His Majesty's impending visit here earned me special consideration, and I had some credit. They say it's best to patronize the place in person. At least Yasna always said...
She took a breath, steadying herself before continuing.
In any case, Dalinar, the research is definitive. We haven't been able to find a single case where the effects of the old magic wore off. And it's not like people haven't tried over the centuries. Lore about people dealing with their curses and seeking any cure for them is practically its own genre. As my researcher said, old magic curses aren't like a hangover brightness.
She looked up at Dalinar and must have seen the emotion in his face, for she cocked her head.
What?
She asked. I've never had anyone to share this burden with, he said softly. Thank you.
I didn't find anything.
It doesn't matter.
Could you at least confirm with the Stormfather again that his bond with you is absolutely, for sure, not what's causing the memories to come back?
I'll see. The Stormfather rumbled. Why would she want me to say more? I have spoken, and Spren do not change like men. This is not my doing. It is not the bond.
He says it's not him, Delinar said. He's annoyed at you for asking again. She kept her arms crossed. This was something she shared with her daughter, a characteristic frustration with problems she couldn't solve, as if she were disappointed in the facts for not arranging themselves more helpfully.
Maybe, she said, something was different about the deal you made. If you can recount your visit to me sometime, with as much detail as you can remember, I'll compare it to other accounts.
He shook his head.
There wasn't much. The valley had a lot of plants, and I remember I asked to have my pain taken away, and she took memories, too. I think.
He shrugged, then noticed Navani pursing her lips, her stare sharpening.
I'm sorry, I...
It's not you, Navani said. It's the Night Watcher. Giving you a deal when you were probably too distraught to think straight, then erasing your memory of the details?
She's a Spren. I don't think we can expect her to play by, or even understand, our rules.
He wished he could give her more, but even if he could dredge up something, this wasn't the time. They should be paying attention to their guests. Teshav had finished pointing out the strange glass panes on the inner walls that seemed like windows, only clouded. She moved on to the pairs of discs on the floor and ceiling that looked something like the top and bottom of a pillar that had been removed, a feature of a number of rooms they'd explored. Once that was done, Teravangian and Adratagia returned to the top of the room, near the windows. The new radiant Mulatta lounged in a seat near the wall-mounted sigil of the Dustbringers, staring at it. Dalinar and Navani climbed the steps to stand by Teravangian.
"Breathtaking, isn't it?" Dalinar asked. "An even better view than from the lift."
"Overwhelming," Teravangian said. "So much space. We think that we are the most important things on Roshar. Yet so much of Roshar is empty of us."
Dalinar cocked his head. Yes, perhaps some of the old Teravangian lingered in there somewhere.
Is this where you'll have us meet?
Adratagia asked, nodding toward the room.
When you've gathered all the monarchs, will this be our council chamber?
No, Dalinar said. This seems too much like a lecture hall. I don't want the monarchs to feel as if they're being preached to.
And... When will they come?
Teravangian asked, hopeful.
I am looking forward to meeting the others. The King of Aesir. Didn't you tell me there was a new one, Adratagia? I know Queen Fen. She's very nice. Will we be inviting the Shin? So mysterious. Do they even have a king? Don't they live in tribes or something? Like Marathi barbarians?
Adratagia tapped his arm fondly, but looked to Dalinar, obviously curious about the other monarchs. Dalinar cleared his throat, but Navani spoke.
So far, your majesty, she said, you are the only one who has heeded our warning call.
Silence followed.
Thelena,
Adratagia asked hopefully.
We've exchanged communications on 5 separate occasions, Navani said. In each one, the Queen has dodged our requests. Aesir has been even more stubborn.
Eri dismissed us almost outright, Dalinar said with a sigh. Neither Marabethia nor Rira would respond to the initial request. There's no real government in the Reshi Isles, or some of the Middle States. Babatharnam's most ancient has been Koi, and most of the Makabaki states imply that they're waiting for Aesir to make a decision. The Shin sent only a quick reply to congratulate us, whatever that means.
Hateful people, Teravangian said, murdering so many worthy monarchs.
Yes,
Dalinar said, uncomfortable at the king's sudden change in attitude. Our primary focus has been on places with oath gates, for strategic reasons. Aesir, Thalen City, and Eerie seem most essential. However, we've made overtures to everyone who will listen, Oathgate or no. New Natanen is being coy so far, and the Herdazians think I'm trying to trick them. The Tukari scribes keep claiming they will bring my words to their god-king.
Nivani cleared her throat.
We actually got a reply from him just a bit ago. Teshav's ward was monitoring the span reads. It's not exactly encouraging.
I'd like to hear it anyway.
She nodded and went to collect it from Teshav. Adrategia gave him a questioning glance, but he didn't dismiss the two of them. He wanted them to feel they were part of an alliance, and perhaps they would have insights that would prove helpful.
Nivani returned with a single sheet of paper. Dalinar couldn't read the script on it, but the lines seemed sweeping and grand, imperious.
A warning, Nivani read, from Tazim the Great, last and first man, herald of heralds and bearer of the Oath Pact. His grandness, immortality, and power be praised. Lift up your heads and hear, men of the East, of your God's proclamation. None are radiant but him. His fury is ignited by your pitiful claims, and your unlawful capture of his holy city is an act of rebellion, depravity, and wickedness. Open your gates, men of the East, to his righteous soldiers and deliver unto him your spoils. Renounce your foolish claims and swear yourselves to him. The judgment of the final storm has come to destroy all men, and only his path will lead to deliverance. He deigns to send you this single mandate, and will not speak it again. Even this is far above what your carnal natures deserve.
She lowered the paper.
Wow, Adrategia said. Well, at least it's clear.
Taravangian scratched at his head, brow furrowed, as if he didn't agree with that statement at all.
I guess, Dalinar said, we can cross the Tukari off our list of possible allies.
I'd rather have the Emuli anyway, Nivani said. Their soldiers might be less capable, but they're also, well, not crazy.
So, we are alone?
Taravangian said, looking from Dalinar to Adrategia, uncertain.
We are alone, your majesty, Dalinar said. The end of the world has come and still nobody will listen.
Taravangian nodded to himself.
Where do we attack first? Herdaz? My aides say it is the traditional first step for an Alethi aggression, but they also point out that if you could somehow take Thelana, you'd completely control the straits, and even the depths.
Dalinar listened to the words with dismay. It was the obvious assumption, so clear that even simple-minded Taravangian saw it. What else to make of Alethkar proposing a union? Alethkar, the great conquerors. Led by the Blackthorn, the man who had united his own kingdom by the sword. It was the suspicion that had tainted every conversation with the other monarchs.
Storms, he thought. Taravangian didn't come because he believed in my grand alliance. He assumed that if he didn't, I wouldn't send my armies to Herdaz or Thelena. I'd send them to Yarkaved, to him. We're not going to attack anyone, Dalinar said. Our focus is on the Voidbringers, the true enemy. We will win the other kingdoms with diplomacy.
Taravangian frowned.
But...
Adrategia, however, touched him on the arm and quieted him.
Of course, Bright Lord, she said to Dalinar. We understand.
She thought he was lying.
And are you? What would he do if nobody listened? How would he save Roshar without the Oath Gates, without resources? If our plan to reclaim Kolinar works, he thought, wouldn't it make sense to take the other gates the same way? Nobody would be able to fight both us and the Voidbringers.
We could seize their capitals and force them, for their own good, to join our unified war effort.
He'd been willing to conquer Alethkar for its own good. He'd been willing to seize the kingship in all but name, again for the good of his people. How far would he go for the good of all Roshar? How far would he go to prepare them for the coming of that enemy, a champion with nine shadows?
I will unite instead of divide.
He found himself standing at that window beside Taravangian, staring out over the mountains, his memories of Evie carrying with them a fresh and dangerous perspective.
25. The Girl Who Looked Up. I will confess my murders before you. Most painfully, I have killed someone who loved me dearly. From Oathbringer, Preface. The Tower of Urethiru was a skeleton, and these strata beneath Shallan's fingers were veins that wrapped the bones, dividing and spreading across the entire body. But what did those veins carry? Not blood. She slid through the corridors on the third level, in the bowels, away from civilization, passing through doorways without doors and rooms without occupants. Men had locked themselves in with their light, telling themselves that they'd conquered this ancient behemoth. But all they had were outposts in the darkness, eternal waiting darkness. These hallways had never seen the sun. Storms that raged through Roshar never touched here. This was a place of eternal stillness, and men could no more conquer it than Kremlings could claim to have conquered the boulder they hid beneath. She defied Dalinar's orders, that all were to travel in pairs. She didn't worry about that. Her satchel and safe pouch were stuffed with new spheres recharged in the high storm. She felt gluttonous carrying so many, breathing in the light whenever she wished. She was as safe as a person could be, so long as she had that light. She wore Vale's clothing, but not yet her face. She wasn't truly exploring, though she did make a mental map. She just wanted to be in this place, sensing it. It could not be comprehended, but perhaps it could be felt. Yasna had spent years hunting for this mythical city and the information she'd assumed it would hold. Navani spoke of the ancient technology she was sure this place must contain. So far, she'd been disappointed. She'd cooed over the oath gates, had been impressed by the system of lifts. That was it. No majestic fabrials from the past, no diagrams explaining lost technology, no books or writings at all, just dust. And darkness, Shallan thought, pausing in a circular chamber with corridors splitting out in seven different directions. She had felt the wrongness Moraes spoke of. She'd felt it the moment she'd tried to draw this place. Urethiru was like the impossible geometries of Pattern's shape. Invisible, yet grating, like a discordant sound. She picked a direction at random and continued, finding herself in a corridor narrow enough that she could brush both walls with her fingers. The strata had an emerald cast here, an alien color for stone, 100 shades of wrongness. She passed several small rooms before entering a much larger chamber. She stepped into it, holding a diamond brome high for light, revealing that she was on a raised portion at the front of a large room with curving walls and rows of stone benches? It's a theater, she thought, and I've walked out onto the stage. Yes, she could make out a balcony above. Rooms like this struck her with their humanity. Everything else about this place was so empty and arid. Endless rooms, corridors, and caverns. Floors strewn with only the occasional bit of civilization's detritus, like rusted hinges or an old boot's buckle. Decay spren huddled like barnacles on ancient doors. A theater was more real, more alive, despite the span of the epochs. She stepped into the center and twirled about, letting Vale's coat flare around her. I always imagined being up on one of these. When I was a child, becoming a player seemed the grandest job. To get away from home, travel to new places, to not have to be myself for at least a brief time each day. Pattern hummed, pushing out from her coat to hover above the stage in three dimensions. What is it? It's a stage for concerts or plays. Plays? Oh, you'd like them, she said. People in a group each pretend to be someone different and tell a story together. She strode down the steps at the side, walking among the benches. The audience out here watches. Pattern hovered in the center of the stage like a soloist. Ah, he said. A group lie? A wonderful, wonderful lie, Shallan said, settling onto a bench, Vale's satchel beside her. A time when people all imagine together. I wish I could see one, Pattern said. I could understand people. Through the lies they want to be told. Shallan closed her eyes, smiling, remembering the last time she'd seen a play at her father's. A traveling children's troupe come to entertain her. She'd taken memories for her collection, but of course, that was now lost at the bottom of the ocean. The girl who looked up, she whispered. What? Pattern asked. Shallan opened her eyes and breathed out stormlight. She hadn't sketched this particular scene, so she used what she had handy, a drawing she'd done of a young child in the market, bright and happy, too young to cover her safe hand. The girl appeared from the stormlight and scampered up the steps, then bowed to Pattern. There was a girl, Shallan said. This was before storms, before memories, and before legends. But there was still a girl. She wore a long scarf to blow in the wind. A vibrant red scarf grew around the girl's neck, twin tails extending far behind her and flapping in a phantom wind. The players had made the scarf hang behind the girl, using strings from above. It had seemed so real. The girl in the scarf played and danced, as girls do today, Shallan said, making the child prance around Pattern. In fact, most things were the same then as they are today, except for one big difference. The wall. Shallan drained an indulgent number of spheres from her satchel, then sprinkled the floor of the stage with grass and vines, like from her homeland. Across the back of the stage, a wall grew as Shallan had imagined it. A high, terrible wall stretching toward the moons, blocking the sky, throwing everything around the girl into shadow. The girl stepped toward it, looking up, straining to see the top. You see, in those days, a wall kept out the storms, Shallan said. It had existed for so long, nobody knew how it had been built. That did not bother them. Why wonder when the mountains began or why the sky was high? Like these things were, so the wall was. The girl danced in its shadow, and other people sprang up from Shallan's light. Each was a person from one of her sketches. Vatha, Gaz, Polona, Sabariel. They worked as farmers or washwomen, doing their duties with heads bowed. Only the girl looked up at that wall, her twin scarf tails streaming behind her. She approached a man standing behind a small cart of fruit, wearing Kaladin Stormblast's face. Why is there a wall? She asked the man selling fruit, speaking with her own voice.
To keep the bad things out, he replied.
What bad things?
Very bad things. There is a wall. Do not go beyond it, or you shall die.
The fruit seller picked up his cart and moved away. And still the girl looked up at the wall. Pattern hovered beside her and hummed happily to himself. Why is there a wall? She asked the woman, suckling her child. The woman had Polona's face.
To protect us, the woman said.
To protect us from what?
Very bad things. There is a wall. Do not go beyond it, or you shall die.
The woman took her child and left. The girl climbed a tree, peeking out the top, her scarf streaming behind her. "Why is there a wall?" she called to the boy sleeping lazily in the nook of a branch. "What wall?" the boy asked. The girl thrust her finger pointedly toward the wall. "That's not a wall," the boy said, drowsy. Shallan had given him the face of one of the bridgemen, a Herdazian. "That's just the way the sky is over there." "It's a wall," the girl said. "A giant wall." "It must be there for a purpose," the boy said. "Yes, it is a wall. Don't go beyond it, or you'll probably die." "Well," Shallan continued, speaking from the audience. These answers did not satisfy the girl who looked up. She reasoned to herself, if the wall kept evil things out, then the space on this side of it should be safe. So one night, while the others of the village slept, she sneaked from her home with a bundle of supplies. She walked toward the wall, and indeed the land was safe. But it was also dark, always in the shadow of that wall. No sunlight ever directly reached the people. Shallan made the illusion roll like scenery on a scroll, as the players had used, only far, far more realistic. She had painted the ceiling with light, and looking up, you seemed to be looking only at an infinite sky, dominated by that wall. This is far more extensive than I've done before, she thought, surprised. Creation Spren had started to appear around her on the benches, in the form of old latches or doorknobs, rolling about or moving end over end. Well, Dalinar had told her to practice. The girl traveled far, Shallan said, looking back toward the stage. No predators hunted her, and no storms assaulted her. The only wind was the pleasant one that played with her scarf, and the only creatures she saw were the kremlings that clicked at her as she walked. At long last, the girl in the scarves stood before the wall. It was truly expansive, running as far as she could see in either direction, and its height! It reached almost to the tranquiline halls. Shallan stood and walked onto the stage, passing into a different land, an image of fertility, vines, trees, and grass, dominated by that terrible wall. It grew spikes from its front in bristling patches. I didn't draw this scene out. At least, not recently. She'd drawn it as a youth, in detail, putting her imagined fancies down on paper. "What happened?" Pattern said. "Shallan, I must know what happened. Did she turn back?" "Of course she didn't turn back," Shallan said. "She climbed." There were outcroppings in the wall, things like these spikes or hunched, ugly statues. She had climbed the highest trees all through her youth. She could do this. The girl started climbing. Had her hair been white when she'd started? Shallan frowned. Shallan made the base of the wall sink into the stage, so although the girl got higher, she remained chest-height to Shallan and Pattern. "The climb took days," Shallan said, hand to her head. At night, the girl who looked up would tie herself a hammock out of her scarf and sleep there. She picked out her village at one point, remarking on how small it seemed now that she was high. As she neared the top, she finally began to fear what she would find on the other side. Unfortunately, this fear did not stop her. She was young, and questions bothered her more than fear. So it was that she finally struggled to the very top, and stood to see the other side. The hidden side. Shallan choked up. She remembered sitting at the edge of her seat, listening to this story. As a child, when moments like watching the players had been the only bright spots in life. Too many memories of her father, and of her mother, who had loved telling her stories. She tried to banish those memories, but they wouldn't go. Shallan turned. Her stormlight. She'd used up almost everything she'd pulled from her satchel. Out in the seats, a crowd of dark figures watched. Eyeless, just shadows. People from her memories. The outline of her father, her mother, her brothers, and a dozen others. She couldn't create them because she hadn't drawn them properly. Not since she'd lost her collection. Next to Shallan, the girl stood triumphantly on the wall's top, her scarves and white hair streaming out behind her in a sudden wind. Pattern buzzed beside Shallan.
"And on that side of the wall," Shallan whispered, "the girl saw steps."
The backside of the wall was crisscrossed with enormous sets of steps leading down to the ground, so distant.
"What? What does it mean?" Pattern said.
"The girl stared at those steps," Shallan whispered, remembering. And suddenly the gruesome statues on her side of the wall made sense. The spears. The way it cast everything into shadow. The wall did indeed hide something evil. Something frightening. It was the people. Like the girl and her village.
The illusion started to break down around her. This was too ambitious for her to hold. And it left her strained, exhausted, her head starting to pound. She let the wall fade, claiming its stormlight. The landscape vanished. Then finally the girl herself. Behind, the shadowed figures in the seats started to evaporate. Stormlight streamed back to Shallan, stoking the storm inside.
"That's how it ended?" Pattern asked.
"No," Shallan said, stormlight puffing from her lips. She goes down, sees a perfect society lit by stormlight. She steals some and brings it back. The storms come as a punishment, tearing down the wall.
"Ah," Pattern said, hovering beside her on the now dull stage. "So that's how the storms first began?"
"Of course not," Shallan said, feeling tired. "It's a lie, Pattern. A story. It doesn't mean anything."
"Then why are you crying?"
She wiped her eyes and turned away from the empty stage. She needed to get back to the markets. In the seats, the last of the shadowy audience members puffed away. All but one, who stood up and walked out the back doors of the theater. Startled, Shallan felt a sudden shock run through her. That figure hadn't been one of her illusions. She flung herself from the stage, landing hard, Vale's coat fluttering, and dashed after the figure. She held the rest of her stormlight, a thrumming, violent tempest. She skidded into the hall outside, glad for sturdy boots and simple trousers. Something shadowy moved down the corridor. Shallan gave chase, lips drawn to a sneer, letting stormlight rise from her skin and illuminate her surroundings. As she ran, she pulled a string from her pocket and tied her hair back, becoming radiant. Radiant would know what to do if she caught this person. Can a person look that much like a shadow? "Pattern!" she shouted, thrusting her right hand forward. Luminescent fog formed there, becoming her shard blade. Light escaped her lips, transforming her more fully into radiant. Luminescent wisps trailed behind her, and she felt it chasing her. She charged into a small round chamber and skidded to a stop. A dozen versions of herself, from drawings she'd done recently, split around her and dashed through the room. Shallan in her dress, Vale in her coat, Shallan as a child, Shallan as a youth, Shallan as a soldier, a happy wife, a mother, leaner here, plumper there, scarred, bright with excitement, bloodied and in pain. They vanished after passing her, collapsing one after another into stormlight that curled and twisted about itself, before vanishing away. Radiant raised her shard blade in the stance Adolin had been teaching her, sweat dripping down the sides of her face. The room would have been dark, but for the light curling off her skin and passing through her clothing to rise around her. Empty. She'd either lost her quarry in the corridors, or it had been a spren, and not a person at all. Or there was nothing there in the first place, a part of her worried. Your mind is not trustworthy these days.
What was that? Radian said. Did you see it?
No, Pattern thought to her. I was thinking on the lie.
She walked around the edge of the circular room. The wall was scored by a series of deep slots that ran from floor to ceiling. She could feel air moving through them. What was the purpose of a room like this? Had the people who designed this place been mad?
Radiant noted faint light coming from several of the slots, and with it the sounds of people in a low, echoing clatter. The breakaway market? Yes. She was in that region, and while she was on the third level, the market's cavern was a full 4 stories high. She moved to the next slot and peered through it, trying to decide just where it let out. Was this... Something moved in the slot. A dark mass wriggled deep inside, squeezing between walls, like goo but with bits jutting out. Those were elbows, ribs, fingers splayed along one wall, each knuckle bending backward. A spren, she thought, trembling. It is some strange kind of spren. The thing twisted, head deforming in the tiny confines, and looked toward her. She saw eyes reflecting her light, twin spheres set in a mashed head, a distorted human visage. Radiant pulled back with a sharp gasp, summoning her shard blade again and holding it wardingly before herself. But what was she going to do? Hack her way through the stone to get to the thing? That would take forever. Did she even want to reach it? No, but she had to anyway. The market, she thought, dismissing her blade and darting back the way she'd come. It's heading to the market. With stormlight propelling her, Radiant dashed through corridors, barely noticing as she breathed out enough to transform her face into veils. She swerved through a network of twisted passages. This maze, these enigmatic tunnels, were not what she'd expected from the home of the Knights Radiant. Shouldn't this be a fortress, simple but grand, a beacon of light and strength in the dark times? Instead, it was a puzzle. Vale stumbled out of the back corridors into populated ones.